I don't think anyone would deny that narcotics are sometimes shipped through the mail. A few months ago, Canadian provinces jumped right into that business model. We even bought some weed on this podcast. Oh, wow. I thought I would have to go through one more step. Okay. So they accepted.
Did you buy it? Did it go through?
Yeah, it did. That was us back in October on the Ontario Cannabis Store website. It was an almost too easy process. As Donald Trump would say, it was very legal and it was very cool. But those are not the only drugs available for sale on the internet. Heroin, fentanyl, methamphetamines, some of the drugs behind a skyrocketing overdose rate that measures as the worst Canadian public health crisis since the Spanish flu, those are all showing up on the doorsteps of savvy users. Or, even more likely, of criminal distributors using it to cut product and sell on the street. The police are not able to search packages they suspect contain these substances because of an arcane quirk in Canadian postal laws. This is the kind of too-dumb-to-be-true story that maybe helps explain why this overdose crisis is already awful and is still getting worse. So why isn't anyone doing anything about it? Like, now. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story, and I am thrilled to be back in this chair. I'm thrilled to still have a job after the fantastic guest hosts we had last week. Today, I'm surrounded by Claire Bees, Claire Brassard, as always, right across from me, our lead producer, and McLean's reporter, Claire Brunel, who broke this story wide open last week. Claire, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, how do people in this country get highly illegal drugs delivered to their house?
Well, it is a lot like ordering something on Amazon, actually, if you're buying it directly. There are, on a corner of the internet known as the dark web, which you can only access with a special browser, and you can't, they're not indexed by Google. So if you have the knowledge to be able to access the dark web, you can find these markets that are selling all kinds of things, not just drugs, but, you know, counterfeit passports, all kinds of stuff like that. And if you know how to find these markets, you can, search different vendors, again, a little bit like Amazon or other sort of big online megastores like that, that are offering all kinds of different products. And you can click on it and get it sent to your house. You can even leave a review.
I won't ask you how to do it, because that would be maybe unethical. But how hard is it when you say if you have the knowledge to get onto these sites, how hard is it? Did you do it?
I did do it. It is pretty hard. I found it more challenging than I expected it to, because first of all, you need a computer, you need an address, you need an internet connection. These are things that, you know, not every drug user necessarily has access to.
Right.
But once you have all those things, you have to know how to download the browser. You have to know how to find the URL of the market. Or you have to know, you know, how to find a website that has the various listings of the URLs that you'd be interested in. So you need a little bit of sort of insider knowledge there just to begin with. Anytime you send a message on there, especially if you're sending sensitive stuff like your address in particular, most vendors want you to send it in encrypted format. So you have to learn how to use PGP, which is not the simplest or most user-friendly thing to do.
Okay.
And then finally, you also have to pay for it in Bitcoin. So you have to know how to do that. So it's quite a few barriers to entry there for the average person.
When you went through all the hoops to finally log on to the dark web and explore these marketplaces, what did you think? What was it like?
Honestly, it was a lot like using the internet in 1997.
Really?
That's what really struck me. Yes, it's very slow. It crashes all the time. Because the way that the browser you have to use works, it's routing your IP address to a bunch of different servers around the world. It's a sort of slower, more cumbersome process. And so also, you know, all the sites are very simple, all the graphics they use, you know, so that they'll load quickly. It brought me right back to, using ICQ and that sort of thing back in the day.
Did you make any purchases?
I did not make any purchases.
We bought pot on this podcast by accident once, so you can fess up if you have to. Assuming you can do all that and you browse the marketplace and leave reviews and presumably follow the reviews, You make a purchase, then what happens?
Well, then the product that you ordered is going to, just like you order any other product on an e-commerce website, they're going to put it in a package. Many of them advertise that they'll do things to make it more discreet. They'll put it in, silica gel packets, or like hide it in some sort of way. And then it's the same way that any package gets sent to your house. It gets sent to your house through the mail.
What kind of mail?
So in particular, these vendors are using Canada Post. Canada Post is the shipping method of choice because in Canada, there is a legal quirk that means that the police can't search packages sent through the mail, even though they can get a warrant to search packages that are sent through courier services. This goes back to the days when, the mail was letters. That was what most of the bulk of the stuff going through the mail was. So when this law was designed, it thought, we don't want police to have the power to just open your mail and read your private personal correspondence, the same way that we don't let police just tap our phones, things like that. What it didn't anticipate was that, letter mail was going to become less important for Canada Post, and parcels were going to become a bigger and bigger part of their business. And so now we're in this strange situation where the exact same package sent through a private courier service has a lot fewer privacy protections than one sent through the mail.
It seems insane that we've gotten this far down the road of converting our national postal service to a package delivery service, because I can't remember the last time I got a piece of mail that was not either a bill or a financial statement or a package from Amazon or somewhere. And these laws haven't changed at all.
Yeah, no, it hasn't been updated. I talked to some liberal MPs about why they don't want to change it to close the loophole. They considered changing it in 2017. There was, a consensus from law enforcement officials, the RCMP, the CBSA, the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police, were all saying, hey, this is a problem. We need you to close this loophole. The Liberal government considered it and decided not to act. And I don't have a lot of information about why they made that decision. When I reached out to them, they basically highlighted some other measures they've taken to address the fentanyl crisis, and said they think the system that we have in place, which is basically where police work with postal inspectors, because postal inspectors can open the mail, strangely,
right,
even though police can't. They actually have more power than police do. They basically said that system is functioning the way it is, and we're not planning to change it.
When you talk to some of these people in law enforcement, how big a problem do they say this is?
They say it's something that comes up pretty regularly. I spoke with the RCMP's head of organized crime, who said that, it's true that they do find a way to make things work within the system. He cited a big investigation they did, Project Crocodile, involving fentanyl sent through the mail, where they did, they basically brought a postal inspector along with them so that they could open packages on a case-by-case basis. But that it's something that stands in their way on a pretty regular basis and gets in the way of investigations.
What do Canadian postal inspectors do to screen the mail? What does that process look like without police involvement?
I asked Canada Post that question. I didn't get a ton of details. They said they didn't want to reveal exactly what their processes are for screening the mail, but they do, they said they exist. They said they do have some. I know that if something is visibly leaking or smells funky, or if somebody wrote fentanyl handle with care on a package, something like that, it would get escalated up to a supervisor. I'm not sure exactly what measures they have in place in terms of, do they have x-rays and sniffer dogs? They didn't want to go into detail about that.
You talk to drug users who do order these products through the mail.
I did, yes.
How does it arrive? Have they ever had any problems? How pleased are they with the service they're getting?
Yeah, the ones who I talked to who do this on a pretty regular basis said that it works great, that they've never had any problems, that they, don't really expect to ever have any issues, that both them and the vendors they buy from are aware of the difference in, legislation for if you send it through Canada Post or a courier service, and that they feel pretty safe and secure doing it.
Did the RCMP give you a sense of what this loophole looks like in regular course of business, or a scenario in which this impacted an actual investigation?
Yeah, well, I think a good example is of what police can do when it's sent through a private courier. So I found a case involving a Calgary man who had some packages shipped involving methamphetamine ingredients to a UPS box. And so in that case, the CBSA actually caught it as it was coming in, alerted police, you know, that this person at this UPS box was getting some illegal substances being sent there. So police were able to get a search warrant for everything going into that UPS box. So that's something police can't do. So if it's a Canada Post with Canada Post, if it's a Canada Post PO box, they can't just say we want a warrant for everything going in there, even if they have reasonable, you know, suspicion that there's some funny activity going on like they did in this case. They have to do it on a case-by-case basis with the postal inspectors. But because they were able to get a warrant for everything going into the box in this case, get it some information about who owned the box, they got the rental agreement, they got cooperation from the UPS store owner, and then, you know, they were able to intercept more stuff that was going into the UPS box, gather more intelligence on this person and the kind of stuff they were up to, and they used all that as evidence in the case. So that's something they can't do if it's through Canada Post.
Do we have, or does anybody have, a sense of the scale of this problem, of how much illegal drugs are being sent through the mail?
Well, one thing we know that the CBSA's, the majority of their fentanyl seizures are coming through the mail. So they're seizing millions of fatal doses worth of fentanyl every year.
And that's what they're catching.
Yeah. And they say that, yeah, the majority of it, occasionally it'll come through a cargo shipment or something like that. But most of the time, because fentanyl in particular, it's really well suited to going through the mail because it's, you only need such a small amount of it to be extremely potent, right? So you have 15,000 potentially fatal doses and just 30 grams, which you can fit in a letter-sized package.
Right.
So, you know, you're even a bulk shipment of fentanyl can be in, you know, quite a small package easily sent through the mail. So that's, you know, one of basically these laboratories in China make the fentanyl. You know, you can order it directly from them. It comes into Canada through the mail, gets processed, and that's just, you know, an easy way to ship it in.
That was what I was going to get you to explain next, actually, is the whole international connection of all this and the fact that while some of it might be on the dark web, some of it is not.
Yeah, that's right. So I think it's important to make a distinction between most people. The fentanyl overdose crisis is not being driven by people ordering it directly from the dark web. So what's happening for most of the fentanyl that's coming into Canada is organized crime groups are ordering it from laboratories in China. They are still ordering it online. It's still coming through the mail.
Right.
But they're ordering it in bulk quantities, which, again, a bulk quantity is not actually very much in terms of weight. They're processing it mostly in laboratories in Western Canada into things like counterfeit heroin and OxyContin. And then the end users are doing it. They don't even necessarily realize they're doing fentanyl. Most opioid users aren't seeking out fentanyl. Some of them are. But they're doing these drugs. They're distributing them to regional street dealers who don't even necessarily know what they've been cut with. And that's what's causing the overdose crisis, because people don't know what's in the drugs that they're doing.
It kind of brings up an interesting quandary in that although it's against the law and is using Canada Post in a way that legislation clearly never intended, the users, the direct users who are getting their drugs over the dark web and through mail delivery are getting safer products.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting byproducts of this system and how it's changed the drug trade is it's sort of made a dichotomy in a way where people who have the resources and the knowledge in order to navigate the dark web, doing all those things that I described, you know, buying cryptocurrency, figuring out how to use encrypted messaging services, they're at an advantage where they can, because these markets have a lot of information that aren't available to your average street drug
right.
user. You know, people are leaving reviews. If it was cut with a dangerous amount of fentanyl, somebody would probably leave a negative review. A lot of these markets even ban fentanyl entirely. So they have a degree of quality control from these markets that, you know, gives them a level of assurance. Whereas on the other hand, your average street drug user who has to rely on the stuff from just these regional dealers, you don't even know what's in them, things have become much riskier for them as a result of e-commerce and the drug trade.
Is there anybody, and I know no direct action happened as a result of what the police asked for in 2017, but is there anybody in Ottawa working on this, as far as you can tell?
So we're working on that as a follow-up. We're still calling around to opposition MPs, trying to find out if there's really anybody who's taking this on as a cause.
It seems nuts that nobody would jump on this issue.
Honestly, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, especially since, I mean, just that it seems, you know, if you're concerned about privacy, if you think that it's really important that packages being sent through the mail shouldn't be searched by police, that's a fine position to hold. But why is it okay to have different standards for packages sent through the courier than through Canada Post? That's the part of this that I can't think of any reasonable defense for why it should be that way.
It's a remnant, right? It's, to your point, it's a remnant from when the mail was something different than UPS.
Yeah, that's exactly right. When, you know, things sent through the course of post, the people who designed that phrasing in the Canada Post Act, they were thinking of letters. They weren't thinking
of
packages.
When was that?
Well, it's a bit hard to pin down because the Canada Post Corporation Act is from 1981, but that's because that's when the Canada Post Corporation was created.
Okay.
But the wording, I understand, dates back to long before that. And this whole sort of concept behind that of, you know, strict privacy regulations for the mail.
Do these kind of loopholes exist anywhere else? Is this something unique to Canada? Does it put us at a disadvantage when it comes to trying to stop the infiltration of fentanyl?
Well, interestingly, the U.S. has the same problem, but for different reasons. Actually, I started looking into this because I learned about a U.S. Senate report where this Senate committee, you know, found a whole bunch of online fentanyl dealers, communicated with them, and actually, you know, subpoenaed records of their payment. They asked, you know, what's your Western Union number or whatever they're using for payment. You know, that we're actually able to trace who was ordering it within the U.S. It was really interesting. And they found the same thing, that it was the U.S. Postal Service that was being used. They came to the conclusion it was because they had less strict screening than the couriers did, and because they use less sophisticated data collection in terms of where it was coming from. So I don't think they have the same dual legal standard of what police can do to search the mail, but they have the same problem for a different reason.
How much would it take to actually close this loophole? Is it just simply a matter of updating that act and saying now if police have suspicion, they can open a package?
As far as I know, yeah, it would be, you know, the same way that you have to amend any bill. You know, they'd have to pass it through Parliament and, you know, go through all that sort of thing. But I don't think there's any, you know, anything special in there. I don't think it would violate any charter rights or involve anything.
Is there a privacy lobby that knows about this and is defending the mail's right to privacy?
I contacted the Canadian Civil Liberties Association, and they actually, counter to what you might think, also agree that they think it's would be fine for police. Basically, that they, you know, that it's fine if they have the same rights to look at packages going through Canada Post as through courier services. They want letter mail to be protected still. So packages under 30 grams, okay, which the police would like the power to look at those too, because as I mentioned, you know, you can ship a lot of fentanyl in a 30 gram package.
Right.
But yeah, they basically said as long as we keep the protections for letter mail and that the standard should be something more like getting a wiretap than getting a regular search warrant, we don't see any reason why there should be this difference in the privacy standards between private courier packages and Canada Post packages.
So it's not even like there's a special interest group standing in the way of any legislation.
I mean, if there is one, I can't find one. Obviously, Canada Post, I did reach out to, and they said something sort of similar to the Liberals, that we, you know, we think the system we have in place is working well, where we cooperate with police on investigations. So, you know, obviously, they're not jumping up and down saying that we should change the law, but that's sort of the one group I could find that, you know, isn't really in favor of it.
When you published this late last week, I know that some radio stations and television stations immediately jumped on it because, and we wanted to talk to you too, because it's just one of those things that seems staggering that it happens like this. What's the response been from some of the people you talked to, and has there been, or do you sense there might be any movement? Because this is an election year, right? This is an issue it might be easy to get on board with.
Yeah, we're definitely hounding some people. We're trying to, you know, come back to them, get more reaction. It's been hard so far. It's not something that a lot of people in Ottawa seem to really want to jump on and comment on, even though it seems like it would be an obvious one for the Conservatives, for example, to jump on. Seems like an obvious issue for them to pick up.
Right.
I reached out to their public safety critic, didn't hear back from him either. So we're gonna keep on them and, you know, see if we can get an answer out of somebody. But so far, not much.
Thanks, Claire.
Thank you.
Claire Brownell, reporter, investigator at Maclean's. That was The Big Story. For more from us, we are, as always, at thebigstorypodcast.ca. We are at frequencypodcastnetwork.com. We added a new show, Roz and Mocha. If you live in Toronto, you know them. If you don't live in Toronto, you really want to know them. Find it there. Check it out. You can also find us on social media at TheBigStoryFPN on Twitter and at FrequencyPods on Twitter, on Facebook, and on Instagram. And we would love a visit wherever you get your podcasts to throw us a rating, throw us a review. We need to tell people how much you like this show so that they don't replace me. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Thanks for listening. We'll talk tomorrow.